City Council Business Meeting. It is Tuesday, February 18th, 2020. It is 9 a.m. Please join me in the Pledge Allegiance to the flag.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Holland.
Here.
Councilmember Branquino.
Here.
Councilmember Cuff.
Here.
Mayor, absent is Nick Klufas and Jack Howell.
Thank you. We'll now open up to public participation. It's time for the public to come up. You have up to 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin. Speaker. You can speak.
Yeah, I know. I'd like to hear, too. All right, my name is Phyllis Robin Scheffler. I don't come before you as a warrior. I come to you as a quasi-prosecutor, laden with information that I have garnered through months and months of research since my husband passed away. I face a defense attorney councilman, a counsel attorney, and quasi-defense attorney persons. I am not pleased with being told, following the meeting on February 4th, that he, an unnamed person, that he's listened to me for the past 4 months attacking This is not my bent, nor have I ever lived these 94 years as such a person. I am a giving and caring individual who is merely trying to fight a wrong perpetrated by the city of Palm Coast through a faulty permitting process that has caused me great harm. I realize that it is difficult to admit that errors may have been made in granting a permit to a scoundrel because the permitting process has been extant in its present form for many, many years. But initiating a change and admitting to a shortcoming does not create a bad mark, but merely a willingness to right a wrong and to fix the mess with which I have been left because of a lack of inspections during the first 4 weeks of a 6-week restoration process of my upper deck. By so doing, it would also eliminate the possibility of those cunning individuals of getting around stating falsehoods on the permitting application. I ask the jury of my peers to give me consideration to making a long-needed evaluation of a poorly designed process. And I present before you, as a prosecutor, my evidence. This is 10 months of research, both on the state level, on the county level, and on the city level. This is how I have spent the past 10 months. And if you can't understand that and are not willing to listen, then I feel sorry for you. As caring individuals and elected officials, you should look into something that has hurt one of your constituents. I plead my case.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning, Robin McDonald, Palm Coast. I've been following. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to attend many meetings because of my work schedule, but I've been following this latest situation in the city of Palm Coast with a moratorium being put on dollar stores. I'd like to ask the city, how did they single out dollar stores? Are they singling out housing? Putting a moratorium on housing? I don't think so, because I just drove through town center and saw all the new housing units being built. They're not certainly putting a moratorium on gas stations, because we're finally going to get a Wawa up on 100. So I'd like to ask the city, why are they singling out dollar stores? And there's got to be a reason. So that's all I want the mayor to answer my question. Why did the city single out dollar stores? That's all I want to know. Thank you.
Next speaker.
Good morning. My name is Sue Urban. I am a City of Palm Coast resident. I am here today representing Nick's House. I am also representing Flagler County Mental Health and Wellness Advocates, which is a group made up of five groups that have banded together to address the mental health and suicide epidemic that this county is facing. Those groups include Fifth Season Counseling, LLC, Find Your Peace by Pieces, 501C Nonprofit, Word of Mouth Creations Ministries, Nick's House, and Family Matters of Flagler. We are holding monthly roundtable meetings for our community to come together and ask us and tell us what they need help with to address these matters. We had a roundtable meeting on February the 2nd and had identified through a survey that the biggest barrier that people are coming against is lack of services within the city and county, the cost of those services, transportation to those services. They said that their recommended preference for contact is in person, and that telehealth is impersonal and sometimes very confusing, especially to someone in a mental health state. We also have learned that in the state of Florida, a Baker Act is the only way to receive inpatient services in these local counties. You cannot voluntarily admit yourself. You can go in on a voluntary basis, but you are then placed in an involuntary hold as a Baker Act. This is not acceptable. This is traumatic to all that are involved, including our law enforcement, our first responders, the person that is going through their mental crisis. We ask that the city come together and join us as we've asked the county to call for an audit of all funds allotted for Flagler County through the groups Flagler Cares, SMA Healthcare, Lutheran Services. We would like a detailed report of the spending for the residents of Flagler County, specifically Palm Coast. This would include county, state, federal, city, and grant money. We would like to know that our funds are going to our residents and not to another county's residents that are in need. Our people should come first. Also noted in this is that we have not had a Medicaid psychiatrist in Flagler County in 2 years. Palm Coast Counseling has hired a full-time adult psychiatrist that will be starting on March the 2nd and will be accepting all insurances. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next speaker. Close public comment. Cindy, I was asking Matt the other day, moving forward, I'd like to put all of the public comments into Palm Coast Connect as a case so we can respond to the residents and track them and put them with the appropriate administrator. So can you begin that process? Thank you. Okay, we'll now move to the approval of the minutes of the City Council for February 4, 2020 business meeting. Do I have a motion to approve? Move to approve. Second. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Seeing none, passes unanimously. Ordinances on the second read. Agenda item number 2 is an ordinance. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Mayor. Excuse me. This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, creating a new section chapter 9 of the City Code, establishing a process for the issuance of trespass warnings on public property. It provides for notice requirements for trespass warnings and establishes an appeal process for trespass warnings, expanding the jurisdiction of the special magistrate to include the hearings of appeals from issued trespass warnings. This ordinance provides for the repeal of prior inconsistent ordinances and resolutions and incorporates this into the code, provides for severability and effective date. Mayor, Council, this is the second reading. There have been no changes. As stated in the title, the main purpose of this is to clarify and to memorialize a process for protection of the public, protection of the city staff, and the safety of the public buildings and structures and places, but at the same time provide a process for those that and standards for those that may be subject to these concerns and therefore subject to trespass warnings. So it's a balancing.
Council, any questions or comments on this agenda item? Open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 2, please do so at this time. None, I'll close public comment, take it back to this council, entertain a motion.
Motion to move.
Move for approval. Seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number 3, again, a second reading, is an ordinance. Mr. Reichman.
Yes, Mayor. Title of this ordinance is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Palm Coast, Florida, amending the City of Palm Coast Code of Ordinances by establishing a new section providing for the regulation of vapor-generating electronic devices and liquid nicotine, providing for severability, for codification, for conflicts, and for an effective date.
Mayor, Council has indicated that the last meeting there was supposed to be a pause for us to finish up the enforcement reconciliation internally with code and with Flagler County Sheriff's Office. However, this had been advertised and was unable to be pulled, so it is today on more as a ministerial function. I'm not asking for any action today. Staff still has to do our enforcement detail and work on this ordinance.
So you're asking for it to be tabled?
It has to be, yes, ma'am. It has to be opened. If anyone's here to speak on it, that's...
It's been advertised, Mayor, so if we could just go ahead and open and let the public speak. But we're requesting that the council not take action on it. Rather, the request for your action would be a motion to table, not for a continuance to a day certain. Thank you.
Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 3, please do so at this time.
Hi, Terry Williams again with Tobacco Free Flagler. I'm kind of glad that you're tabling this, because I think that we're getting ahead of ourselves, because there wouldn't be a way to oversee it. So I know I've sent you, Mr. Reichman, the information on the ordinance on tobacco retail license. That would include the vaping products and how to oversee it and how to monitor the places that are selling it in the city. So I think that's a great way to go. And if you need any more information from me, I'll be glad to provide it or help y'all. Thank you.
Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. So we'll take it back to this council for an entertainment motion.
Motion to table.
I move we table the item.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number 4 is a resolution approving the final plat for Sawmill Creek.
We have staff here to present.
This is a final plat for Sawmill Creek. It's the last phase of the subdivision process. This is part of the Palm Coast Park DRI off of US 1. It was a development of regional impact, and it's consistent with the development order of that application. It's also consistent with the zoning and the comprehensive plan. This last phase is technical in nature. Staff's responsibility is to make sure it complies with the standards of the Land Development Code, and also our legal team to make sure that it's consistent with Florida statutes. With that said, Mr. Hoover, Senior Planner, will have a staff presentation.
Good morning, everyone. The Palm Coast Park DRI and Master Plan Development is about 4,600 acres in size and located along both sides of US 1. And Sawmill Creek is a major portion of this, and it makes up most of Palm Coast Park DRI that's located west of US 1 and north of Matanzas Woods Parkway. And this first section of it is, you can see a little bit better on this one, it's comprised of tracks 6A and 6B. It's about 110 acres, and it will Sawmill Creek will eventually have about 2,200 homes, with most of those being single family. And this first section is located west of US 1 and then just north and east of Hewlett Branch. There's 259 single family homes in this project, and in this the plat, the north arrow is pointing to the left. So US Highway 1 is on the north side, and Hewlett Branch is on the bottom of the screen and the right-hand side of the screen. About two-thirds of these lots are 50-foot wide, and one-third are about 60-foot wide, so they have a little bit more flexibility for development. There's a total of 11 tracks, with four of those for stormwater lakes and the rest for recreation, utilities, amenities, and open space or conservation. And you can see the larger conservation area is located right next to Hewlett Branch. A performance bond has been received. It's for infrastructure improvements, and it would be in the amount of $433,000, about $731. The final plat for Sawmill Creek at Palm Coast Park, application number 4099 has been determined by city staff to be consistent with the comprehensive plan and meeting the technical requirements of the Land Development Code. And staff and the applicant are here if the council has any questions.
Council, do you have any questions at this time?
Not this time.
Open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 4, please do so at this time.
James Fisk. I'm a board member of the Fort Fulton Historic Trust, which is north of Ranch House Grade. I'm just concerned about the amount of space that is being designated in between Hewlett Branch and the housing. I saw that there was a conservation area, but I would like to know just how much that is.
Okay. Thank you. Next speaker. And then I'll close public comment. Right, can you answer that, please?
Part of the development of regional impact was that all of Hewlett Branch would be placed in conservation, and the applicant is going to do that. You can look at the map here. You can see the dash speckles, that's actually the wetland. And then if you see the grayed out area adjacent to the single family homes, that is upland area. So there is several hundred feet protecting to make sure that there are no secondary impacts from the single family homes to the conservation area. So they're actually going above and beyond of what the DRA conservation flume area is and adding that extra buffer.
Several hundred feet is what?
It's several hundred feet.
It looks like it's over 300.
Yeah.
I just had a question. I'm used to dealing with DRIs with Department of Community Affairs. Obviously, that organization was dissolved under Governor Scott's leadership. Now it's under DEO. Is that sort of the responding entity when we present a proposal as this size for impacts?
That is correct.
Okay.
This one went through that process.
Okay.
Because it's a final plat. We make sure that they are consistent with the development order that was adopted by City Council for preservation areas. But you're exactly right. Not only that agency, Mayor, but the St. Johns River Water Management District, Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, Historical Resources, Department of Environmental Protection, they all part of the initial application. You know, we're concerned about the natural environment, and they're the ones, along with City Council and City Staff and the Northeast Regional Planning Council, determine what that buffer should be to protect those natural resources.
Okay. Thank you. Council, any questions?
I just had one. I'm trying to figure out, Ray, exactly where this subdivision sits on the location map. What's the northern boundary of this subdivision?
It's a one-third mile. The south tip of where Hewlett Branch crosses US 1 is a third of a mile north of Matanzas Woods Parkway.
Right. Yeah. And what's the northern boundary of the plat that we're looking at today? I mean, it's quite a ways south of Old Kings Road, I guess. Just trying to get. Okay.
Right. So the very top of DRI is where Old Kings Road comes in.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
And so I guess you would say the north end of this is about half, the north end of the first tract is halfway up to Old Kings Road.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Project up right here.
Okay.
Whoops.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's
Canal Pump?
Yeah, and yep. The out parcel adjacent to old to US 1 that's not part of Sawmill Creek.
There's about a 36-acre trek north of the trek 6A and 6B.
Right.
I forget the people's name, but they it's sort of like an agricultural tract that they're holding.
Yeah, that's the only questions I had.
No, nothing else? I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number 5 is a resolution authorizing the city manager to execute the East Flagler Mosquito Control District low-level flights and appoint a city council member to accompany the Mosquito Control District on an aerial tour. I would like to nominate Jack Howell.
Get the words right out of my mouth.
I can't make that motion, but if someone would make that motion, I'd appreciate it.
I nominate Council Member Howell as the council representative. I believe he did it last year, didn't he?
Yeah.
And survived.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
I'd like to open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on this item, please do so at this time. And I'll close public comment, take it back to this council.
I don't see much of the pro-mosquito lobby here today, so I would move approval of the resolution and the nomination of Council Member Howell.
Second. I'll second that. And in case if he doesn't want to go, we'll go.
Sounds good.
Just in case if he doesn't want to go.
I can't imagine, but he's not here. So.
Plan B.
That's right. You're a pilot
okay.
Also.
Yeah.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, passed unanimously. Mr. Morton, will you make sure that Council Member Howell knows?
Yes.
Thank you. Agenda item number 6. Is a resolution approving an interlocal agreement with Flagler County related to the public safety communication network.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Doug Aikens, IT Director. Lieutenant Faust. I'm sorry. Lieutenant Faust and I will be presenting an interlocal agreement between the City of Palm Coast and Flagler County for the equipment, usage, and access to the 800 megahertz network for the county, also called the Public Safety Communications Network. This partnership addresses two of Council's strategic action plan priorities, those being to develop a plan for emergency communication upgrades in consultation with Flagler County and other partners, and also to work with County Technology Team on emergency communications to identify solutions for areas with poor to no reception. So a little bit of background on this interlocal agreement. Back in 2005, the city created its own single-site 800 megahertz network. The county was not prepared at that time to create its own network, so the city created one. 4 years later, in 2009, the county had created their 800 megahertz network, and the city and the county entered into an interlocal agreement to merge those networks together. The city transferred its single city tower to the county system, and the city also invested $1.5 million into an escrow account for future expansion of that network. In 2018, this council approved an interlocal agreement between the city and the county to upgrade the 800 megahertz system, again called the Public Safety Communications Network. The city and county worked together to implement a new P25 system for the benefit of all parties, and the upgrade provided for better clarity, more capacity, and improved area coverage. And Lieutenant Faust is going to bring us through some of the new features of the upgraded network.
Good morning.
We have to use this one.
Alrighty, so the new system is going to be about 98% effective throughout the whole county. And the way we measure that is 3 feet at the hip anywhere in the county. So we're looking at 98% effectiveness at that level. And just to give you a baseline of where we're going to, where we've been, our current system operates at just about 70%. So we have sporadic areas within the city, within buildings and outlying areas where we have little or very poor reception. So the new system should be resilient enough to overcome a lot of the barriers that we have right now. The current system also has another flaw. It's no longer going to be supported. The manufacturer no longer makes any more radios or any more parts. So we're very limited in what we can do with our current system. Any kind of failures in radios and equipment cannot be replaced anymore. By upgrading to P25 Phase 2, we are actually meeting what the national standard is right now. The upgrade will bring us into total interoperability. What I mean by that is we will be able to operate with all of the different entities within a city, whether it be at the public safety level or non-public safety level, which means all of our public works, utilities, stormwater, all those departments can freely speak to each other in and around the city and the county and even adjacent counties without any kind of interruptions.
That was my question.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, I know that the regional council, Northeast Regional Council, a few years back was actually contracted to create the statewide emergency evacuation plan. And I knew they, looked at sort of communication as one of the top priorities. So is this consistent with, obviously, to the north of us, St. John's and Volusia, it'll be a seamless form of communication if there was a mandatory evacuation to communicate and coordinate?
Yes. Okay. We will be able, St. John's is already operating on the system that we're going to. Volusia County has recently upgraded their system as well.
Okay.
And out to the west, Putnam County is kind of following in our footsteps, looking to do the same upgrade. So to answer your question, we will be able to communicate freely through their 800 systems. There's a program that runs in the background where we can actually go up into their counties and continue to talk to everybody in Flagler or be patched in and talk to everybody through Volusia. And not only does that extend to the counties above and below us, but every county in the state that is operating on the system, we can speak freely if we were to get dispatched to a major event up in the Panhandle, down in South Florida on the West Coast. As long as they're operating on the same system, which most people are at this point, we have free communication throughout.
Just a quick question. 98% coverage.
Yes.
Why 98%? Is that we don't have enough repeaters, or?
When the consultants came in and they measured what we have as far as landmass, foliage, buildings, and the proposed towers, which are in place right now, that's the number they came up with that will be their effective rate that we can operate at. That's actually going to be validated once the system is fully implemented and up and running. Then we will actually go through and do a grid-by-grid validation of the system, and the target is 98. We could wind up being a little higher or slightly lower. But by and large, it's a gross improvement from where we are right now. So what we've done is, as a team, we've actually looked at what we have and where we're going. And we found that we have a lot of redundancy and a lot of units that were not being used. So what we've done is we have created a more resilient system that's based upon the platform of handhelds or portables versus vehicle-mounted radios. So we've ruled out that redundancy and streamlined the operation by mobiles, because the mobiles are as resilient as, the portables are as resilient as the mobiles once were, power-wise effectiveness and the ability to reach out and talk to everyone throughout the county. We are entering this agreement by renting the equipment. Currently, we own all of our equipment. We will be renting equipment from the county. And what this is going to do is we will not have any overhead. We will not have the onus of maintaining a supply of radios or replacing radios. All that will be on the county. And what we will be doing is paying upfront to avoid any interest over the term of the 10-year term that we'll be using the radios, the 10-year lifespan of the radios. So by paying the $876,000 upfront, we have satisfied our rental fee for the 10-year period.
So what are we doing with our current equipment?
The current equipment is borderline being rendered obsolete. So what we're going to do is we do not currently have a solid plan of what we're going to do. It will be coming out of all the apparatus and vehicles and collected up. We are looking at ways to possibly surplus it. And I need to get together with finance to figure out how we can you know, approach that so everything is legal.
So it's obsolete due to the fact that they're no longer supplying parts for it, or is that correct?
The parts are extremely scarce. Nothing's being manufactured anymore. And support for this system, being that it's so old, is fading rather rapidly.
And so the cost-benefit analysis for renting as compared to owning, that just went into the plan, or was that Flagler County driving that decision?
We actually looked at the – Flagler County was a proponent of the rental. The thought process behind that is they're fronting the money and they're taking on the onus of providing this service to the entire county. By them owning it and renting the units back to us, we don't have to carry any kind of overhead. We're not going to have more incurred cost as far as keeping a cache of radios and parts and pieces that will continually be budgetary items that we have to continuously fund. So by having the rental, they maintain the onus of having all the radios, all the parts, all the control, if we wind up just being an end user that's paying a subscription fee. Based upon the maintenance agreement, we will have to pay $120 per radio per year, which will be an annual fee of roughly $47,700. And what that covers is the maintenance, the care, programming, reprogramming, tower maintenance, items like that.
So in the event we have an event we are in need of utilizing these for that emergency, who is responsible for assigning the channels? You know, do we have any control over that moment? Or our IT staff, will they be involved as well?
Yes, and we've been working together very well with our partners in the county as far as setting up our normal day-to-day channels that we operate on. And when we get into a situation where we have a major storm coming or a major event happens, we can work very freely with the our IT department and the county IT department to set up special channels as needed. The radio profile that we've built into it actually has several channel profiles specifically designed for big events if we need to have multiple channels available for different events that are going on.
Okay.
Those $47,000 maintenance fees, are going to be for the same for the 8 years, are going to be $47,000 period, or it could go up?
It is, if there are any changes to that, the county has agreed to let us know prior to us entering into our budgetary cycle to make any arrangements. At this point, they assume that the $47,000 will be the number going into the future. They advise possibly up to 1% to 2% increase, just depending on market factors, as far as increase in prices in parts and pieces and items like that.
And that's for the equipment that we've agreed to. If we get more equipment, obviously that price would go up.
Yep.
So I guess, Helena, I would ask you a question about the budget then. Where is this coming out of?
Fund. We have budgeted for 2020 $1.2 million, and we also have the $50,000 for the maintenance agreement that they are referring to.
So I know our communications fund, you know, has been less than what we expect every year due to the fact of changes of how those fees are collected.
The communication services tax, yes, that is correct. That has been decreasing due to the bundling of services, but that revenue is supporting our general fund. The communications fleet fund is supported by payments from the different divisions that use the 800, well, the new radio system.
Okay. So you feel even with a future adjustment, if possible, we're allocating that as a separate fund within the budget?
Yes. What we do is we set up, the same way you set up our fleet fund, we have a fleet communications fund. So through the budget process, each department that has a radio pays an allocation towards that fleet communications fund. So at the time where you need to make a reinvestment, there are funds available. So the planning of this fund started many years ago with former finance director Chris Quinn. He started that, you know, payment program into the communications fund to accumulate what we have today. So we will be doing the same thing.
Okay. So to build up, so in future years, if we have to make another big investment, if an upgrade is necessary, we'll have the funds available.
That is the plan, yes.
Okay.
Well, actually, I know we discussed this, the budgeting for this at length at a workshop a million years ago, it seems now, but the renting versus owning, does the rent that we're paying include replacements? I know we're going to more mobile, more handheld units because they're more versatile. I'm guessing handheld units get run over, lost in the woods, and generally destroyed more often than a radio in a truck or a car. What do we have as far as budgeting for replacements for equipment for this? I mean, I assume we anticipate we're going to have some.
Yes, we are. We're going to need to budget for potential, we'll say, catastrophic failure of radios. Anything that is normal wear and tear obviously will be repaired by the county under the service program. Any kind of gross negligence on our behalf, loss of a radio, like you said, a vehicle running over a radio, something like that, the onus is going to be on the city to replace that at market value.
Are they insured?
I don't have an answer, Mayor. I can find out that information for you.
There's a manufacturer's warranty. I'm not sure that that would rise to the level of insurance, Mayor. That would be something that would be a kind of a business or administrative decision for the city, whether they would wish to do that in addition to the manufacturer's warranty, which we are a beneficiary of under this agreement.
So do you foresee, like, a lot of those being thrown in the woods, like Bob said, or under a truck? I mean,
hope they're not going to throw them. Somebody through the woods or something, they might drop it.
The way we operate is our radios are our lifeline, so we take very good care of them. And more times than not, they're pretty much strapped very tight to us because they are our lifeline.
Okay.
You know, that's the way we interact with everybody. And a feature of this new system is they can be GPS located as well. So if somebody was to, we'll say, lose a radio, or it falls off somebody or winds up in a ditch if Public Works is working, we can actually go ahead and ping the radios and find out where they are. So the threat of any lost equipment is probably pretty slim at that point.
Is Flagler Beach going into the system as well?
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Everybody in the county are partners in this, from Bunnell PD, the Sheriff's Department, County Fire, ourselves, Flagler Beach PD, and Flagler Beach Fire.
Maybe that's something you could talk about with the city managers, of just as an option of looking at insurance as an option to see if, like, an umbrella policy.
Yes, that never came up, and that's a great question. We'll definitely follow up with that, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Helena.
Okay, so we talked briefly about increased interoperability, and obviously with the 98%, we're going to reach a larger portion of our population. The radios in regards to, we'll say, fire, our public safety, they're what we call multi-band radios. They're going to monitor the new 800 megahertz system, VHF and UHF. Basically what that boils down to is we can talk with any of our public safety or non-public safety entities in and around the state, including Department of Forestry, who solely works on VHF, so we can reach out and talk to them as well on some of our major wildfire events. Not to mention, the school board will be starting to use this system on a limited basis so they can interact with school to school throughout the county as well.
Can the system work inside the schools? I know they're having some challenges internal inside the buildings themselves with reception. Does this hinder that?
The system will work in the schools with the aid of what we call bidirectional antennas. And from our latest meeting with the county, the schools are going ahead and they are installing the BDAs in the schools, so the signal will penetrate into the campuses.
I think that's important, you know, especially inside the schools, if there was an active shooter or something like that, you know, to be able to communicate not only with the first responders inside, but outside as well.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And a big part of what we're doing is training as well. I mean, it's radios typically turn on and off the same way, and for your channel types, they're mostly the same. So there will not be major differences between the operation of the radios we have today and the new radios, but we're going to be very proactive in training our staff to know how to use the radios in the event that we do have an emergency. And what we're going to be doing is quarterly training, department to department, and at least once a year we're going to have a major mocked-up event where everybody who is a user on the system, at least citywide, will have to use the radio and respond and be able to contact where we have set up as a command unit. They're going to have to respond back with a certain amount of information and a certain amount of interactivity between departments. It could be public works to fire or fire to utility or admin to all of them, but we're going to make sure that our folks are well-versed, so when we get to hurricane season, they're ready to go, so we're not just scrambling in our time of need. What I have up in front of you is just a quick chart of where we've been and where we are, and you know, we've created a more vibrant plan for our future. We ran a click count back in 2017, and basically all that shows is that radios that had keyed up at least once will show up in a click count. And from, you'll see mobiles, portables, and base radios. And from the click count that was done over a year period of time, we could only validate, we'll say on the mobiles, 155, portables, 189, bases. We actually had one more in the system than we initially thought. And this is radios that were, we'll say, on the books. And a lot of them were inactive, missing, been reassigned, reallocated, been moved around inside or outside of the city due to potential failures or other departments using them. Our validation total was 356 radios. And like I said earlier, we have had a gross reduction in the amount of mobile radios to the tune of 77% or decreased by 120 units. Portables, we've had an 89% increase with a change of 160 radios. And bases, as we've grown and we've opened more departments and divisions, we've had the need for more base radios to sustain operations. If we look at the grand total, with radios that we've taken out of service and put more in, we've only had an 11% change or a net of 42 units.
So I know that our fire chief is working on the 10-year plan for the department. Has this taken into account the future growth? We have a lot of development proposals coming our way. I know that the sheriff is requesting additional deputies. That's why I think the law enforcement impact fee thing needs to happen now, so projects like these, you know, can be allocated for that purpose. So I just want to make sure, you know, are we factoring that into the budget as well?
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Yes, we are. As we're looking at expansion down the road and in the future, any type of impact to the fire department where we have to put in resources, that's going to be part of the equipment resource list. So not only is it a fire station, a personnel, or it's a fire truck, it's also the equipment that's going to need to be make that operation work. So that will all be factored in as a regional impact to the fire department at that point.
And can the impact fees go towards that?
Yes.
They can?
Okay. If we can demonstrate that rational nexus of new impact or new addition to the system, then absolutely those impact fees can be used towards acquisition of new equipment for new service. So that is a viable
And so when will that impact fee, fire impact fee, come to us?
We have provided all the last information about 4 weeks ago. They're working through the process of putting it all together. Shannon and Finance has also been working with Sean Ocasio from the company that's doing the impact fee review, and it should be available probably, I think, 6 weeks. I'm not sure. 6 weeks from now, the impact fee should be ready? Fire impact fee.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to put us in a position where we're, seeing a lot of this growth come in and we're not actually now being realistic about the ongoing costs. Again, this is different than the one-time cost of growth. The ongoing cost is something we really need to be mindful of.
One thing that has spawned from the impact fee study is the data that we were able to collect is shedding a lot of light on where our gaps in services are, and we'll be putting several different projects together to present to Mr. Morton as to exactly where we are in gaps and what we need to fill in. It was very enlightening for us on seeing how good we are and where our problems are, and I think this is the information that was given to the fire impact fee study has been used on multiple different in-house projects as well. So there's a lot of information that will be coming forth real soon.
I think it might be helpful when we do have projects of this scale and size that we have coming forward, if we actually have a realistic conversation about truthfully what the ongoing costs and the impact to our budget are going to be. So when we're going through this process, we're making sure we're planning not only at that time, but allocating the appropriate resources. I mean, we've got a great fire department, frankly, that does an extraordinary job and keeps our residents safe. But as we grow, we want to make sure we're not losing that response time and the allocation of resources.
The long term is sustainability. How long can we keep doing what we're doing at this current rate? We call it a burn rate, no pun intended, but it's a burn rate of what we're spending money on. And is it going to be affordable as we start increasing call volume, density in the population, density in the calls, and that's over a long-year projection. I will say that Brad Clark, our deputy chief, is phenomenal. This is what he does as a living on the side, and he's been an asset in developing the programs that we're using to figure out where we need to be in the next 3 to 5.
Yeah, because it's not inexpensive to run a fire department. I mean, it's a large portion of our budget, and equipment like this is absolutely critical, frankly.
Correct.
But we want to make sure we're budgeting appropriately to make, not miss that
exactly.
Mark.
And to your point, Mayor, we actually are still working on and hoping to have done by the end of the month RFS for the law enforcement impact fee. So that is in process. It's been slow, but we are in process and are working to get that out as direction of council provided to us.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt your presentation. I just think
Fine. It's
really important that
Yes, ma'am.
We're recognizing some of the growth impacts we'll have.
So just a quick timeline of where we've been, where we're heading to. 2017, the decision was made to upgrade our communication system. 17 into 19, we did our needs assessment and made future recommendations, as I alluded to earlier. In 2019, all of our equipment was ordered and all the infrastructure was built throughout the county, including towers and upgrades to the dispatch center. And now that we've reached 2020, we're really starting to charge forward. In February, they're putting in the alerting systems at all the fire stations. In March, the tower testing begins. In April, we'll start getting all the equipment installed in fire apparatus and the white fleet across the city. and May 1st is our tentative go-live date where we throw the switch and go on to the new system.
So just a quick recap of this interlocal agreement. The county, as Lieutenant Faust said, the onus is on them to provide access to the network, service, support, and installation. There is a one-time rental fee of $876,000, $253.44, and also an annual subscriber fee of $120 per subscriber unit. We currently have 398 subscriber units. The list of that equipment is in your agenda packet, and that's an annual cost of $47,760. So that first year cost will be the $876,000 plus the annual cost of $47,000. And as Helena mentioned, that was budgeted and approved in this year's communications fund. So any further questions or discussion?
Council, any questions or discussion at this time?
It's all about public safety. Emergency work is critical.
Thank you. We'll now open it up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on this agenda item, please do so at this time.
New is okay. Oh, Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. New is okay, but you better have a backup, because for some reason or another, new doesn't work. You better have something cover your you-know-what. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning. Just as a first responder that worked the county just south of us in Volusia, we do have a communication issue in the low southern portion of the county that where we have boundaries where the lines cross, so you have Volusia County EMS responding to a same call as a Flagler County unit just because of the locations. And it's very difficult in those locations to communicate with each other because our radios don't work with each other. So we have to rely on sending the information to our dispatch and then our dispatch relaying it to their dispatch to relay it to them. So there's a lag in time. And also in service area, if you go into those areas, a lot of times our radios don't even work. As a first responder, that's our lifeline. That's where we get our help from. That is how our brothers and sisters know where we are. They can locate us. And it is only beneficial that it extends out into the rest of the community for utilities and such that they can all be on the same network, especially in the event of an emergency, state of emergency, such as a hurricane or disaster. I would like to know what is the backup plan if that system is to fail, is how would we still be able to communicate, is if that particular communication tower or whatever stops working, do we have a backup plan in place?
Next speaker.
I'm also a tour guide and a historian at the Florida Agriculture Museum. I do have concerns. I couldn't make out where the northern boundary of where the 98% goes. I'm concerned about not only the Ag Museum, but also Prince's Place Preserve. Will there be coverage there? The reason I ask that is we have a new museum that has come into the Ag Museum from St. Augustine, the old Florida Museum. We had school children that came from all over the state of Florida, southern Georgia, southern Alabama. I even had a program, a Spanish program that I did, that I had school children that came in from China. So we will probably have, once this is completed, up to 1,000 to 1,500 school children at the museum at one time. And if we're out of that boundary, I have major concerns there. Also, with all this development that's coming in, especially the 4,700 acres just south of, the northern end of Flagler County, why not put the impact fees on all these people where you have zero amount that's coming out of city coffers?
Thank you. Next speaker. I'll close public comment. Can you respond to the speaker's questions?
Yes, ma'am. In regards to the backup plan, this new system is built in with a whole different level of redundancies in our current system. If we would have to have absolute catastrophic failure to the tune of actually losing towers in order to go down. And the way the system is built into a ring, if we were to lose a tower, we can still work the system off of the other four towers. If we were to lose the 800, which is actually quite resilient, would be a major problem to take down the 800 system. We can revert back to our VHF system, and we can work off of one tower and work that out to the radios back and forth. So short of losing all of our towers and all of our fiber and everything that we have in the ground and pole to pole, ground, air, if we would have to be totally decimated in order to lose our communications. So the system is quite resilient. We have multiple backup systems to maintain communications if we ever got to a serious disaster situation. And if it boiled down to it, we can actually go radio to radio at that point if we switch over to VHF. So we have a lot of fail-safes in place to forego any of that.
No, so yeah, no, sorry. But there's not a speaking back and forth.
I just wanted a clarification.
No. I will ask the question. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Can you talk about compatibility, please?
Yeah, in regards to the compatibility, once the new system is up and running, Volusia is operating on the B25 Phase 2. There's the system I spoke of earlier that runs in the background allows us to work seamlessly with them because we actually will share a tower with them. They will share a tower with us. So any of these gaps that may currently be in place should be resolved with the new system because we're going to have that abundance of signal overlapping between counties as well.
And I'm assuming that's unincorporated Flagler County. So, I mean, Flagler County South, I'm assuming you're talking about Plantation Bay and those areas.
Yes,
that's
ma'am.
Outside of our boundary.
Yes, ma'am.
So the county would oversee that jurisdiction.
Yes.
Okay. And then as far as Mr. Fisk's question about the northern boundary, can you speak to that? As well as making sure the northern boundary with the Ag Museum as well.
Yeah, the northern boundary, if we look at that map, and I apologize, I can't really blow it up anymore, but the green extends all the way up past the 204, way past Princess Place, actually up into the Matanzas area of St. John's, and it's far west out into San Mateo, up into Hastings, it gets a little sporadic, so... As far as anything up there in the area of the Ag Museum, we should be very well covered, sir.
As far as impact fees go, we must spend our impact fees where the impact occurs. So those are decided, obviously, at the time development occurs and what that true impact will be.
Yes, correct.
Okay, great. Council, any other questions or discussion on this item?
Nope. Not for me.
Now I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval.
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. We'll now move to agenda item number 7, which is resolution for a local match for the assistance to firefighters grant award for the peer fitness training and firefighting job related fitness equipment.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Today we have a grant coming before you that was started by Andrew Woolwine, our captain. At the early part of 2019, we received tentative approval in late September of 2019 with the expectation this would come before council for final approval. This grant is basically to provide peer fitness training and equipment to the fire department, which in turn would be a benefit citywide to the employees throughout the city. Currently, we have weight equipment and resources in the stations, but this grant is going to provide for the education and training of 12 individuals to be designated as peer fitness trainers, which is quite a bit more than what would normally be required for any kind of a training program. The matching grants is a 10% grant for the total of $156,216. The FEMA portion would be $142,014, and the city's matching grant would be $14,201. Funding for the matching part of the grant would come from our training budget, which we had $5,000 allocated for peer fitness training this year. The remainder, $4,000, would also come from the training budget, and then there's $6,000 that we can actually take from encumbered funds from the operations budget. The benefit for this program is going to be widespread citywide. Current exercise equipment that we do use will be distributed for any of the departments in the city that could use them and have the facilities to place them. The peer fitness trainers will work with HR to provide their services to all city employees so that they can actually expand out the fitness program to other employees. And we're going to develop a plan with HR to allow the city employees to have access to the fire department training centers so that they can actually come into the fire departments and use the equipment and resources. And we are asking that the council approve today's our request for the grant.
Council, any questions on this agenda item? Seeing none, I'll open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 7, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment, take it back to this council. Entertain a motion?
Move approved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Agenda item number 8 is a resolution approving a master service agreement and Connect Consulting for professional hydrological services on an as-needed basis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We have Mr. Adams here to present.
Yeah, this one's pretty straightforward. We utilize a professional hydrogeologist, anything related to our well field, drilling new wells, maintaining existing hydrogeological groundwater modeling, and our consumptive use permit. So it's just a consulting service that we've used for many, many years.
Council, any questions on this agenda item? Seeing none, I'll open up to the public. Any member of the public wish to make public comment on agenda item number 8, please do so at this time. Seeing none, I'll close public comment, take it back to this council, entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Second. Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes unanimously. Next on our agenda is public participation. If you've spoken at the beginning of the meeting, this is for those that have not spoken to speak at the end of the meeting. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin.
Lewis McCarthy, Palm Coast. I have just one complaint, and that is, you know, several times I've been behind vehicles which are Palm Coast vehicles, and it seems as though they forgot how to use their signals, either arm signal or what, I don't know, but a lot of them assume that you know where they're going, and they turn left or turn right or whatever, make lane changes, but no signaling is done. I would urge all the supervisors of the city who can tell their people to please use the signals. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Steve Carr, Palm Coast. PC Connect is a great tool, but I'm afraid that this, some way the city is, it's been used to impersonalize people from coming to the city council to get answers. And In other words, we come here to ask things, and we would like to get an answer when we ask them. But then all of a sudden, we're wanting to have everything put into PC Connect. There's a lot of elderly people here in Palm Coast. There's a lot of retirees moving to Palm Coast that don't know how to use computers. So what are we going to do with those people? So I just want the city to take a look at PC Connect and how you plan to really use it. Because right now we're not getting a communication back and forth with the city at the city council. So it's going to discourage more people from ever even coming to the city council because they're not going to get answers. So I just ask you to really look at how you want to use PC Connect as far as the city council meetings and in response to the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Okay. Thank you for your comments. We'll now move to agenda item number discussion by city council of matters not on the agenda. Since there's three of us, I will start with you.
Well, since my voice is barely held up through the regular meeting, I'll hold any comments or questions. Other than I would like to follow up on Mr. Carr's comment. And I don't interpret the use of PC Connect the way the speaker did, but there certainly is the possibility that if we put too much emphasis on apps and online communication, that we will lose some of the personal connection with the citizens that want or need information. And I assume that by logging citizen questions, particularly public speakers' questions, into the system, that's just our way of tracking it. It doesn't mean they're going to have to give us an email address, and the only way they'll ever hear back from us is in a text message or an email, but that they will receive answers to their questions from the appropriate staff members, whether that's by a phone call, a personal meeting, or some written communication that doesn't require you to have an iPhone or a Samsung or a laptop. So that's my only question or comment for today.
Councilmember Brown?
Nothing at this moment.
Nothing? Okay. And I just want to update the council. We attended, went to Tallahassee last week in a lot of meetings, a series of meetings that our lobbyists had set up in regards to UNF, MedNex. It went exceptionally well, very well received, and we're hoping to get some news in the upcoming weeks on the outcome of that. So I will be keeping the council updated as the progress goes, but all in all, it was a very positive few days in Tallahassee. Okay, discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing, Mayor.
Thank you. Discussion by city manager.
Nothing, Mayor. Thank you.